Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballengee. It's great to have you here with us. You can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Check us out on our website, golfnewsnet.com and golfnewsradio.com. Also, find my work over at Yahoo Sports, a presenting sponsor of this program, at Devil Ball Golf on sports.yahoo.com. If you subscribe to the show through iTunes, thanks so much for doing so. Please listen to Golf News Net Radio. It's our 24/7 stream of golf talk that's available on golfnewsradio.com, golfnewsnet.com, and through the TuneIn Radio app. So we've got a fair amount to get to this week on the program, and we had a really compelling tournament at Tampa, the finish of the Valspar Championship with Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth and Sean O'Hare, who should not be left out of this conversation. He was brilliant down the stretch. It was great. It's one of the best tournaments of the year, if not the best tournament of the year. And the thing I really liked about it was the clutch nature of every player involved, and it wasn't necessarily that every shot was perfectly executed. It was because some shots were poorly executed and the follow-ups were so brilliant that made the tournament so great. For Reed to make the 30-footer that he did, looking so confident on the 72nd hole, to post 10-under, get in the house, and put all the pressure on the guys behind him to get to that number and see if they can meet him, that was huge. And I think it was a big mental moment for him as a guy who stood in the 15th tee at the Honda Classic in the final round on Monday with a share of the lead and went splashdown and cost himself everything. Even though he gave himself at least a look on the final few holes, it wasn't good enough to get into that playoff with Patrick Harrington and Daniel Berger, with Harrington eventually winning. And that was really the first time, I think, in his professional career, albeit a short one, that we saw Reed with an opportunity to win slide back, or in this case, slide into the water. But he didn't do that on Sunday. He charged at Valspar, had a great final round 66, got himself into the conversation, made a big charge on a golf course that is not very forgiving. And he didn't lose the playoff. And I want to make that very clear. He did not lose that playoff. The escape he made on 18 from just lodged inside of the face of that bunker just underneath of it, that's an all-universe save for par to extend the playoff, or at least his participation in it. That showed a lot of moxie, and it showed a guy who truly believes in his skill, and that when you get him into what amounts to a match play situation, even though there were three guys involved, that he's the best in the world, if not one of the three or four best in the world at that kind of golf. Whatever you think of Patrick Reed as a human being, and I'm not the biggest fan of his, I waffle on this because I greatly admire what he can accomplish as a professional, and what he has overcome through from Monday qualifying throughout 2012 and 13 to get his status, to win the Wyndham Championship, to peel off four wins in less than 2 years, to get into the top 15 in the world, to get awfully close to that top five moniker that he had bestowed on himself after winning at Doral. You have to admire all of those things about him, but it's pretty easy to dislike him as a person, particularly how he's handled himself with this situation relating to Shane Ryan's book, charges that he cheated during qualifying tournaments in college, and that an allegation that he stole from a teammate at the University of Georgia during his brief time there. So it's kind of this weird balance. I go back and forth, although lately I'm more in the dislike column, personally speaking. I like to watch him play golf, and I'm sure you probably feel somewhat the same way. If you don't care about what he's done in the past, which really isn't all that far away because he was 24, so it was less than 6 years ago, all that stuff started to unfold. But whatever, if you don't care about that, then you have to be a big Patrick Reed fan, because the guy just plays his butt off. And when he smells blood, he sinks his teeth in. And there are not a lot of guys in golf that can say that. There really aren't. And winning in golf is very hard, so more often than not, guys get presented with opportunities and they fail. And Patrick Reed just doesn't seem like that kind of guy yet. And I think that means that he wins the Masters or even comes all that close? No. But here's the caveat to Patrick Reed. That if he gets close, and you never know when he's going to get close, but if he gets close, then you put your money on him. It's almost kind of like live betting if you're in the UK or elsewhere in the world and listen to this show. And you see odds update in real time, when they're going to win. If someone can win, if they get close, all of a sudden they go from being an underdog to a favorite, or that you don't get as much money on a return if they do win the tournament. I would bet on Patrick Reed with 4 holes left in the golf tournament. I wouldn't bet on him otherwise. Because if I know that he's in the mix with 4 holes left to play, then I really like his chances. If he, at any other point in the tournament, I'm really not all that interested. It just doesn't strike me that way. Versus Jordan Spieth is the complete opposite. I would bet on Jordan Spieth almost every week that he plays. I wouldn't get good money doing it. Obviously, he's only won twice on the PGA Tour and 4 times as a professional. However, he is so consistent as a player that it's hard to ignore his talent level and his ability to play literally anywhere there is a golf course. He has been all over top tens this year, and he gets so little television time. And part of this was CBS. I think they just find him kind of boring. But Spieth has quietly played some amazing golf, and now he finds himself in the top 10 in the world, his highest rank as a professional. He was already in the top 10, but highest rank as a professional, and a guy who is poised to take that next step at 21 years old. He's 21. He's going to turn 22 not too long from now. But what I really love about his game and what makes him so dangerous every week is that he has the game to play any kind of golf course. He can hit all the shots. He's got them all. He's got the confidence to go along with it to execute them too. But what was especially important about this tournament, about the Valspar Championship, was that he won without his best stuff. He didn't look all that great on Sunday. He shot 269, which that was a score better than he probably deserved for how he played. He didn't look very good on the front nine, made consecutive bogeys on 5 and 6, was really in line to make a third consecutive bogey at the 7th, were not for a clutch putt for par, which wasn't really statistically a putt, that kept him in line with Ryan Moore, who had opened up a nice lead thanks to an eagle on the 6th hole, which was a 3-shot swing there. And all of a sudden, he just kind of grind away. Moore makes mistakes. He's bound to make mistakes. It's the player he is. A couple of clean birdies on the back nine, gets himself into position, and then he kind of falls back again and has to find a way to get up and down the final 2 holes from really nasty lies, and he does it. And you have to admire that. Just as you admire Reed for when he seizes an opportunity, you have to admire when a guy figures out how to win without his best stuff. That's why I thought Rory McIlroy's win at the last summer's PGA Championship was his best professional victory to date, because he didn't have his best stuff, but he found it when he needed it. He found it when he had opportunities. I'm thinking of the 10th hole, which was a 5-wood that he hit low on the face, but thin to win, got there, got the eagle that he needed, and put himself in position to win his 4th major championship. Does this all of this portend anything about the Masters? I don't necessarily think so, especially in Reed's case, because Reed doesn't have the best, albeit a short record, at Augusta National. Spieth doesn't have a perfect record there, but at least he was in contention on Sunday a year ago and had the lead on the front nine on Sunday. That's a big deal. And I think he knows and knew from that experience that he needed to learn a little bit something more about taking his game other places, about handling pressure, about winning without your best stuff. Those are big lessons for major championship winners to learn, especially the guys that win more than one. You can win one with a fluke week, but to win more than one, you have to learn how to do it with talent, managing the golf course, managing your nerves, managing those maybe 7 to 12 holes in a tournament where you don't have your best stuff, knowing how to make pars instead of making bogeys, how to make bogeys instead of double bogeys, stealing birdies. Those are all things I feel Jordan Spieth has learned in the last 12 months. And that's going to be a huge asset for him if he's able to play well at Augusta National, get himself in position against whoever it is. And maybe he just blows away the field. That's possible too. But you have to like Jordan Spieth even more than maybe you already did. He went from a 15-1 shot in many books in Vegas. Now he's a 12-1 shot. So if you miss him at 15, you're losing $3 for every one that you bet. But it's kind of hard not to like him. Again, if I was betting every golf tournament, I would bet Jordan Spieth for that very reason, because it just plays so well everywhere that eventually it's bound to work out for you. Just unfortunately, the way odds work, everyone likes his game so much that you would never get those long shot odds where all of a sudden you'd sneak in there and get him at a 50-1. It's just not going to happen. Regardless, I think it was the best tournament of the year, and we didn't even say anything about Sean O'Hare, which deserves a moment, because his story is very compelling. I mean, he's a 4-time PGA Tour winner. He hasn't won since 2011. He won when he was 22 years old in 2005, had 3 other wins between 08 and 11, and then all of a sudden made a change in his golf swing, went stack and tiltish, which was a colossal professional error, and had to go back to the Web.com Tour Finals last year to regain his status, keep his place on the PGA Tour. He only got into Tampa on a sponsor's invitation because he's a really good guy, and the Valspar folks probably really liked that about him. He took full and complete advantage, got himself into a playoff, assures himself his status for next year. There's nothing not to like about Sean O'Hare as a human being. A guy who's overcome a lot in dealing with his family, particularly his relationship with his scumbag dad. And he's overcome all of those things, and now he's overcome going to the deepest professional depths that you can go. And I think that's why his advice to Tiger Woods, or at least his observations about him, on Tuesday at the Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill were very important. They're very on. They can't be more on target because he's a guy who's been where Tiger's been, where he doesn't even know, or O'Hare at one point didn't even know if he could really even swing a golf club again properly, at least well enough to go play on the PGA Tour and hack it around a little bit. And he fought back from that. He learned how to swing the golf club, how he needed to swing the golf club, and it's been wonderful for him. But what O'Hare observes about Woods, he said, is that it seems that he looks lost. And he looks like he's having some kind of mental block, that something that needs to be resolved in his life, whatever that is. And that once he resolves that, Woods can resume being a great player. And I think is the running theory about Woods' issues seems to move from yips to some kind of mental block. It gets a worse prognosis for Tiger. And I say that because you can fix mechanics. I'm not saying it's easy to fix mechanics, but you can fix mechanics. But it takes longer to fix a broken mind. It takes longer to fix something mental because it takes longer to uncover it. It takes longer to figure out how many layers you have to peel back to get to the heart of the problem. And if you can't get to the heart of the problem, you don't solve it. You can deal with the symptoms of a problem very well. And maybe that's what Woods has been doing for a long time, dealing with symptoms. So he's found a way to get around mental blocks. That's why he won, or figured out ways to win, with Sean Foley's golf swing in 2012 and 13 to the tune of 8 PGA Tour wins, with one of the absolute worst sets of mechanics I've seen a top-tier professional have. Maybe that's the way he got around it, was just his mental strength. And at a certain point, you kind of break a little bit. But as more and more people say, and Arnold Palmer said this today when he was holding court at Bay Hill, it's a mental thing. It's a confidence thing. He's got to believe in himself. He's got to get out there and play golf. Palmer knows what that's like. Losing to Billy Casper in that U.S. Open at Olympic, that was probably the backbreaker on Palmer's major winning days, because that moment that he knew he was going to lose to Casper in that playoff, when he lost that huge lead, was it 7 shots on the back 9? That was really the backbreaker. Then losing the playoff was even worse. And that pretty much ended. I'm not trying to make a pun. That's the ghost that still haunts Palmer's career. Probably keeps him up at night sometimes. What could I have been had I won that? Could I have won a couple of more major championships if I had just gotten past Casper that day? And who knows? But Woods has dealt with a lot of professional and personal trauma. So he's gone from having great, an amazing record of major championships, 14-0 with at least a share of the 54-hole lead, loses to Wei Yang. That's the straw that broke his back. It just took longer for it to happen because it was coupled with a professional problem with personal problems that soon followed thereafter. I mean, it's August when he loses to Yang. It's November, late November, that is, when he starts to lose basically his life. He goes into getting embarrassed publicly and has to deal with the fallout of all these women, some real, some not, maybe some who never spoke about relationships with him while he was married, and then he has the fallout of his marriage. He decides to choose playing golf over spending time with Elin Nordegren, so he doesn't skip the Masters as a sign of faith to his family life and his wife. He chooses to play the Masters. He finishes T4. He puts his life into that, gets hurt in 2011, figures out how to deal with the Sean Foley mechanics in 12 and 13. He's back, but he can't close on weekends. In fact, he's just terrible on the weekends and majors now. And then he realizes the swing is hurting him. He has to go undergo back surgery. And then now he's reworking a swing, except how are you going to do this for a fifth time? And he's doing this with a guy who really isn't a golfer. He's a biomechanics coach. And for whatever reason, he's stuck on that. But that's not helping. He's shooting 82. So Woods has to be sitting at home hitting chip shot after chip shot after chip shot going, what? It's kind of like one of those life evaluation moments. How did I get here? And how am I going to get myself out of this? And until he figures out how he's going to get himself out of it, and I don't, and kind of takes the challenge face on and says, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do it with confidence because I believe in what I'm doing, I believe in my past, and I believe in my path forward that I've created for myself, then he's not going to do anything. He's going to be a dud. It's not worth him playing professional golf. It's not worth him showing up to Augusta National and embarrassing himself. If he doesn't have confidence standing over a 5-yard chip shot, he's not going to have confidence over a 100-yard shot that could spin back into the water. Can you imagine the mental toll that if he had the 2013 shot on 15 where it hits the flag and careens back into the water? Can you imagine how the 2015 Tiger would handle that shot? And maybe that's another piece of drama in all of this that probably goes understated. So it seems like the running theory now is it's a mental problem. Okay, well, if it's a mental problem, this is going to be a while. This isn't a finding the bottom of my swing. This isn't old neurological patterns. This isn't old motor patterns. This is head case stuff, and it's going to take a while, and it may never get solved. So that becomes more disappointing to me and probably to golf fans if you think about it, as you hear what people are saying, that despite what Hank Haney tells you, that, yeah, he may have the chipping yips, but the chipping yips are the symptom. They are not the problem. And if the problem is mental, we've got a long path to go on to get to better or at least okay. And that may mean 2016, that may mean 2017, that may mean never for Tiger Woods. And the question is golf prepared to move on? I believe it is. I believe the sport's prepared to move on, especially after what we saw on Sunday at Innisbrook. Because if you're not a fan of the quality of golf that you saw then and believe the future of the sport is bright, with or without a dominating figure like Tiger was at his peak, I can't help you. If you're going to keep to that narrative that golf's dying and needs Tiger Woods to succeed, as I've seen written in a few places, very ignorantly of what's happening in the game of golf, I can't help you. If you're not excited by what you saw, even a little bit, from Dustin Johnson at Doral, or from any other host of young players that are the future of this game, Jason Day at Torrey Pines, I can't help you. The sport has a great future, professionally speaking, and it's because of these kinds of guys. We could talk all day about the recreational future of the sport, and there's plenty of evidence to indicate that we're close to the bottom of golf course closures and oversupply, oversaturation of golf into our popular culture, and that it's starting to level out a little bit. But that's another discussion for another time. Professionally speaking, golf is in a good place, and it's reflected in the ratings, because more people watch Doral, more people watch the Valspar Championship than watch Doral, and more people watch the Valspar this year than any other year it's been on television. Highest ratings ever for the Valspar Championship. Now, yes, it did have its best field ever. 5 of the world top 10 were in the field. But most of them were not factors. Only 2 of them were. The eventual winner and Henrik Stenson. You had Adam Scott who was in there. Missed the cut. Ended his cuts made streak at 45. Justin Rose is in a lost place right now. Another Foley client. And you had Jim Furyk, who was never part of the equation whatsoever. But you got great golf from the future of the sport, from 2 top 20 players, really top 10 caliber players. And people responded. They turned in and watched it. And meanwhile, the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament Selection Show had its worst rating in 10 years. I'm not saying there's a direct correlation there, but people were watching golf. They had other stuff to be interested in. And they have so many choices now. And I think people forget that when they look at ratings. You got to kind of normalize ratings against what you typically see in prime time and what you see on weekends. That's a hell of a rating for the Valspar Championship. So the folks behind the paint company have to be absolutely jazzed or colored pink, that they got this kind of tournament and they got this kind of reaction from the public. I wanted to touch on one last piece of things here, and that is a response that Patrick Reed gave to the folks at Sky Sports over in the UK when he was asked about continued allegations from teammates at Augusta State and now Georgia Regents University and University of Georgia assistant coaches who have said that Reed was indeed suspected of cheating during qualifying tournaments, as well that he at Georgia was accused or alleged to have stolen $400 in a Scotty Cameron putter from a teammate while he was there during his freshman season before transferring across the state over to Augusta. Reed has stuck by his statement, and for whatever reason, you may respect that. But this time he has thrown his teammates under the bus, continuing to try to rely on these statements that were signed by Chris Hack, the current University of Georgia golf coach and who was there when he was in the program, Reed was, and Josh Gregory, who is now the former coach at both Augusta State and SMU, but was the coach at Augusta State when Reed was there, and they won two national championships in the match play format for the NCAA championship. And I think Reed thinks we're stupid. And for as much as I respect him professionally and what he's able to accomplish on the golf course, he must think we're dumbasses in what he is trying to use as a defense for what was behavior that was 6 years ago, or you know, no later than 6 years ago, 4 to 6 years ago, really. And I think at this point, it would really behoove Reed to say that he made a mistake and that he intends to move on from it, asks for an apology from the teammates and coaches of both schools, as well from fans who he's misled about this entire situation, it seems, and to say that I don't cheat now, I've never been accused of being a cheater or a thief for that matter in a PGA Tour setting, in a PGA Tour event, so my professional record is spotless and I learned from those lessons not to take shortcuts and to appreciate the opportunities that I've been given, which I do today in the way that I compete. That would be it. The story would be over. I'm not saying that people wouldn't be upset with him, but most people would forgive him and say, okay, you know, you did something you shouldn't have done. You were young, dumb, and stupid. We were all young, dumb, and stupid once. So it's easy to forgive those kinds of mistakes. What's not easy to forgive is when someone throws another person or set of people now under the bus to cover up a mistake that they made or were accused to have made, and it sounds like he did, make that mistake or mistakes. And once the evidence all comes out and is laid on the table, if Reed looks like a guy who, by the preponderance of evidence, if not without a shadow of a doubt, did these things that were written in Shane Ryan's book and were levied by anonymous accusers and anonymous sources, then Reed just looks even worse. And he's comes across as a guy then who believed he could deceive the public with smoke and mirrors. And that's not going to pan out very well for him in the long haul. So I highly recommend to him that he takes a good hard look in the mirror, decides the path he wants to choose, and the other one is to just let it go. Let it go. And if you let it go, the book gets released, people read it, and just kind of move on. They just kind of move on. And things have a way of just kind of shutting themselves down as other things come up in the news cycle. So that would be my suggestion to Patrick Reed. Either drop it or admit what has happened in the past and be fully transparent about it. Meanwhile, I have to say this, and I don't do this flippantly. I think Golf Channel got themselves into a bad position here, offering Reed an opportunity to speak his mind on their very large, wide-reaching, global platform without offering more skepticism and really more of an effort to poke holes in what Reed said. It was clear from the remarks he made at Doral, whether it was for a pre-taped piece to be aired later or an add-on to some interview work they were doing ahead of the Masters tournament, that there was really no investigation into the statement that Reed made, that he obtained affidavits that no one at Golf Channel saw what those supposed affidavits, really sworn statements, were, and whether or not they really met the criteria to prove that he didn't cheat in college. And that makes that organization look bad. That makes Golf Channel look bad. It's a follow-on to the second time that's happened this year where they've not investigated the story properly enough, not vetted it enough, and put it in print, put it on air, and in the first case, be it the Robert Allenby case, that ultimately had to be retracted, albeit quietly, and no one made mention of it on air, and no apology made to Robert Allenby on air. And then with this situation with Reed, if it ultimately turns out that all of this stuff that happened to him, that he did, in college is true, then they look bad for giving him the opportunity to use their platform to try to bully Shane Ryan and any other folks who were teammates of his at Georgia and Augusta State into changing their stories or not speaking or speaking anonymously or what have you. I hope that there's a real examination there that this is not an entertainment platform. They are a news organization and an entertainment platform. And yes, they can operate separately, but in times like this, they have to operate as one. They have to present a full and clear story to people, offered with all sides, all angles, and not just use it as an opportunity to try to get top players on their air. If they continue to do that, then I feel they lose some credibility. And as the sport's only major media outlet, the game cannot be at its best with a Golf Channel that isn't at its best. That'll do it for us this week on the show. Next week on the program, we'll talk about Bay Hill. We'll see if Rory McIlroy can head into the Masters with a W, or whoever picks up the win at Arnie's Place as well. Maybe we'll get a better sense of what's happening with Tiger Woods heading into the Masters and any other major golf news of the week. You can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook, twitter.com/golfnewsnet, and follow me personally on Twitter at Ryan Balanchy. Until next time, I'm Ryan Balanchy saying thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week on the 19th Hole Golf Show.